every single marketer and every single brand should be attempting to earn a disproportionate share of conversation.
If you work for an organization where they say, bring us a chart that goes up and to the right, you have a challenge.
Half the money I spend on advertising is wasted. The trouble is, I don't know which half.
I am here to inspire you, to excite you, to motivate you, to transform you, to energize you.
Hello and welcome to Pipeline Visionaries. This episode features an interview with Shane Murphy Reuter, the CMO at Webflow, a company that offers non-coders the ability to design, build, and launch powerful websites. In this episode, Shane discusses the importance of the website and the value of being able to build quickly without coding knowledge and without making sacrifices in quality. He also dives into the efficacy of paid and organic search investments and the niche media approach. But before we get into it, here's a brief word from our sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Qualified. If you're a revenue team that runs your business on Salesforce, Qualified will accelerate your lead generation, pipeline, and ultimately revenue. Learn more at qualified.com.
And now, please enjoy this interview between Shane Murphy Reuter, the CMO at Webflow, and your host, Ian Faison.
Welcome to Pipeline Visionaries. I'm Ian Faison, CEO of Caspian Studios. And today we are joined by a special guest. Shane, how are you?
I am doing very well. Thanks, Ian. Great to be here.
Yeah, excited to chat with you today. We're Webflow customers here at Caspian Studios. So that is exciting to chat about all the cool marketing at Webflow and, of course, your background and everything in between. As always, our show is brought to you by Qualified. You can go to qualified.com to learn more about the number one conversational sales and marketing platform for companies' revenue teams. They use Salesforce. Head over to qualified.com to learn more. First question, Shane, what's your first job in marketing?
What was my first job in marketing? Well, taking a step back, when I was in college, I studied law and business. And I was like, oh, I don't want to do that. I want to do something creative. I was like, marketing, that'll make sense. And I had this idea of myself moving to London and being a creative marketer, you know. So I joined a company called Orange, which is a telecoms company, on their graduate program. Loved it and spent about 7 years in London, yeah, before coming to the US a little bit later.
Yeah, and so tell us what it means to be CMO Webflow.
I've now been head of marketing for companies pretty similar to Webflow for about 10 years. Started at AdRoll, running marketing there, then Intercom, ZoomInfo, and now Webflow. And these companies are in these incredibly interesting stages where I join after they've had this like technology innovation in a certain target market that explodes. And they get to a certain scale. And that's like their first rocket ship, you know. For AdRoll, it was retargeting. For Webflow is visual development, right? Small agencies and freelancers being able to build websites at pace. And so my job actually, this is a bit later stage, is pretty broad. Like I equally need to think about how do we build a brand? How do we market the product at the product level? How do we think about self-serve growth? How do we think about sales growth, selling, driving pipeline for sales, which I'm sure we'll talk a lot about. And so it's a very diverse discipline, all the way from thinking about creative to analytics to marketing technology, which is both really exciting and fun, but very, very challenging. And so, yeah, you know, Webflow specifically, I've loved being here at a company that I really feel is like has an opportunity to become generational and it's changing lives that we see every day. And so being at Webflow specifically, I think that there's also an emotional connection there as CMO. It's really fun to have a product in the market that I care so deeply about.
Yeah, and it's just so dang important. You know, every single guest on the show, we ask them how do they view their own website. And every single person says the most important thing for demand, just the most important thing for our brand, for our thought leadership, for everything else. It's so obvious, but it's like, it is the most important thing. And it's kind of funny that for like a decade, everybody just had these really clunky experiences with their website. And the only person who could update them was someone who had to be a freaking world expert at building on that platform. And, you know, with like no code tools and all that sort of stuff. I was telling you the story before this, that our guy, Colin, our head of content strategy, he learned Webflow in a weekend. And now he makes all the updates to our site. He's done really cool stuff on caspianstudios.com. And like, to me, this is like the beauty of marketing technology and the beauty of like this modern landscape of giving people the tools at their fingertips to be able to have an outsized impact. And like, you know, Webflow is right at the hub of that.
Love that. And thank you for being a customer. Yeah, you know, I think marketers up until now have been stuck between a choice of either, do you want to move fast? You move fast, like you get these templates, more templatized tools like the Wixes of the world, or maybe you build one internally where like your engineering team gives you some, you know, kind of components that you can move around. Or power, where, you know, handwritten code unlocks endless possibilities, but it's extremely expensive and extremely slow. The technology innovation that like Webflow have done and other companies have done, like Zapier within process management, that sort of thing, allows you to move at extreme pace, but not give up on the power. So like in Webflow, and the sense that you know this, but like in Webflow, you're manipulating, you're creating real code, right? You're in a visual interface that you're designing, but it's creating real clean code in the background. So you're not giving up on that power. And it's been pretty transformational for customers. And as I said, it gives like companies of all sizes the ability to move fast, iterate, but not give up on that power and also just beautiful design. So it's been pretty game changing.
Yeah. So I started casting 4 years ago. We built the site on Webflow from day one. And like every change we've had to do, everything super easy, add new pages, adding content, you know, adding these sort of things. And it's just like, makes it all easier, you know, it makes everything easier. And it's so important. And there's so many things that hook into your website, obviously, and all these other pieces. It's like, I feel like it's still criminally underinvested as people's websites. And then you talk to like CMOs that come into a company that have been around for 20 years, something like that. And the first, every single CMO I talk to is like, the legacy infrastructure, the technical debt that we have is off the charts. Like I talked to this one CMO, a good pal of mine, public company, and they're like, for a year I spent on the website, like the full year just trying to un-F the entire thing. And like now with the ability to be able to do that stuff so much faster, and like you said, to have the complexity there, it's hugely important. This is where all of our tools hang off of. This is where our Salesforce is and everything else, like, you know, tools like Qualified and all this stuff, it all hangs on your website. You got to have a freaking fast website that works and is great and beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. You said underinvested. It's funny. Like I agree that it's so painful for so many marketing teams to iterate on their website that they tend to just bulk at a lot of the experiments they want to run or updates they want to make, because it's just like, so in some ways it's underinvested, but in a lot of ways it's overinvested. Like in my last job, I think I had a 15 person web dev team just to like build things for the website. And it was like just massive investment, slow moving. So yeah, it's real. And as I said, it's not just, I think, well, Webflow are applying this to the website, but I think it's happening across different industries. And this concept of code dependence is something that we think a lot about at Webflow. We don't think the code should go away. Like code is obviously the backbone of it, but do you need to actually learn to write code? And I think a lot of companies are recognizing that there are ways to give you all of that power without actually needing to write it.
Well, it's so important for marketers. Like the thing for me personally, as a marketer, is like, I want control, right? I want the green light. I want the creative control. And I want to see how this thing looks like in real time. So like as the CEO, if I want to be able to dig in there and scoot around a little bit, but the idea is like, I want that stuff like iterated super quickly. I want to be able to change messaging. I want to be able to change, you know, like we're going through, you know, a little bit of a repositioning exercise at Caspian. And like that stuff is like, you want to be able to be fast at that. And to the point of the underinvested, overinvested, I totally agree. Overinvested on maintaining a site, which you don't, you know, need to have all that stuff anymore, but underinvested in terms of it is your customer experience. How someone comes to your site and buys from you is your customer experience, your buying cycle, the types of content you have on your site, how they can consume it, how easy it is to consume it. You know, it's like all those things are extremely important. And that's the part that's being underinvested, is like the customer experience of when someone gets, you do all the work, spend all the money to get them to the site. And then what happens? And it's like, oh, it absolutely sucks and they can't find anything and, you know, everything else.
100%. Like the other trend we think a lot about is the fact that the first technological innovation for marketers was how you get people to your site. When you think about search, exploded, social exploded, paid social exploded, all SEO, all of that. And, you know, in the first part of my career in technology, that's where all of the investment was going, because it made sense, right? There was tons of opportunity to, you know, put people behind generating traffic. And it's been a bit of a theme actually of my career to shift that in the second half of my career, even working for companies like AdRoll. Their whole value proposition was like, retarget people that were on your site and increase that 2% conversion rate to a bit higher.
Yeah.
You get people to your site. Can you support them? Can you answer their questions? I think given some of the challenges that are making the paid channels less and less effective from a targeting perspective, it's now even more important than ever for companies to invest the time and energy in the conversion part of it. I think people talked about it before. Conversion rate optimization is important. But I promise you, if you look at the marketing team's budget and you look at today how much money they're spending on traffic generation versus conversion rate optimization, it is 50 to 1. And that needs to change. And I think that tools like Webflow are kind of leaning into that, that the fact that I think a lot of people are recognizing that. So yeah, it's an exciting time.
Dude, I cannot tell you how many times I sit down with a company, huge company, Fortune 500 company, what a global 2000, whatever, public company. And we're like, hey, for this, we're going to build this show and we just need to have a landing page for the show. You got to throw it in the nav bar somewhere because we want to position on this. And they're like, it's going to be a big ass with our dev team. And you get the sigh and you're like, it's a page.
Yeah.
Like when I ask Colin to do that in Webflow, it takes him 35 seconds of like, he can spin up a page and put it in the nav bar literally that fast.
Yeah.
But it's just like, how is that possible? And it's not like getting approvals. It's just like getting a page on the site. I always look at that as sort of like the innovation test. It was the guy who wrote Lean Startup. His innovation score for a company is how quickly could a good idea get from the lowest person at the company all the way to the CEO and then implement it. And I think about that with the website of like, it is the canary in the coal mine that if you can't even get a page on your website up in a day, it's like, how can you possibly do anything else right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like crazy.
But it's, you know, not to go too deep on this, but it take things like localization. Right? We just launched a localization product. When I started my career when I was at AdRoll, I was running European marketing. We localized our site in 8 different languages. And I cannot tell you how painful that was. The engineering time that we needed to get it set up, the translation costs, like everything. And now with the, you know, the technology advancement, tools like Webflow and there are other ones, you know, you can translate and localize your site in 20 minutes. Depending upon, like, if you just language, 5 minutes. If you want to do all the images, you know, that might take a little bit longer. If you want to style it differently, that's a little bit longer. But ultimately, you have complete control in a way that we just haven't had in the past. And it is your point, like, the key thing in moving at pace, I think this is true across marketing, across sales, is like, how do you organize your team and give them the tools that empower them, back to your kind of lean startup thing, to go from concept to execution as fast as possible. And typically the way you do that is you cut out the interdepartmental dependencies.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you can empower the marketing team, let's say the designer themselves, to not only like just design it in Figma, import it into Webflow through our Figma to Webflow sync, build it within the day and launch it, that's moving fast. That's like, yeah, it's like game changing.
All right, let's get to your marketing and a little bit more deeper into Webflow in our first segment, The Trust Tree.
With the knowledge you've been given, you are now on the inside of what I like to call the circle of trust.
What, I thought we were in the trust tree with in the nest, are we not?
Where you go and feel honest and trusted and share those deepest, darkest pipeline secrets. We know what Webflow does. What types of customers do you have? Who's in that buying committee?
Yeah, so we think about customers through two lenses. About half of our business comes from agencies. So these are agencies who are building sites for clients, but we have the relationship with the agency. And then about half of it is where the company comes directly to us, like an RCR Fitness or a Caspian, comes to us and wants to build it themselves. And oftentimes they will use an agency as well. So it's a bit of a flywheel. So we really think about our business in that way as a flywheel. And from the buying committee, it kind of depends. Like if it's, as I said, on those two things, if it's coming through the agency, the buying committee tends to be, first, the agency needs to be the one who is like, yeah, we should use Webflow to go and build the site because it matches the requirements. And so internally within the agency, there's typically a champion. Then within the company, their champion tends to be either somebody on the design team or somebody on the marketing team who's trying to move fast. Then they typically bring in the business decision maker who tends to be the head of marketing, CMO, VP of marketing, whoever it is like, yeah, this makes sense to build our company on. And then, really importantly, they typically bring in an engineering decision maker who's like, hey, yes, this technology is secure. We're comfortable with marketing, like being empowered in this way. And so our in a lot of deals, like the three key roles are like that champion who's typically more like the user or manager of the website, the head of marketing and the head of engineering, and maybe with an agency involved too. So it's been, you know, difficult to navigate sometimes, and particularly when our messaging is so much about empowering the marketer, we need to find a way to make sure that we don't alienate the engineering person, right? That's how it's set up and can be complex, but navigable.
What's your marketing strategy? How do you think about marketing holistically?
Yeah, so marketing is pretty straightforward if you summarize it. I'm going to like really summarize it, right?
Yeah.
The job is to define a story that's compelling. And then your job is to communicate that through channels that engage people in order to take some sort of action. At the top level, you've got your brand level. Like this is how, like, why should people buy into you? Like what's like our mission is to give everyone developer superpowers, right? So we've got like this emotional position at the top to get people to actually care about why we exist. Then you've got your solution level. Like what's the problem you're solving? We've talked a lot about that for Webflow. And then you've got your product level, right? Where it's like, hey, use localization to do X, Y, Z. And so we apply that kind of story channel approach all the way from the highest level brand all the way down to the product level. And we're trying to get somebody to an existing customer to adopt the product. So that's how like we think about marketing. And I think about marketing. Our strategy is really twofold. One, we need to go and take larger companies. We call them people with pro sites, the professional sites where they're updating them. They've got a lot of revenue coming through them. And we, you know, our first job is to get those companies aware of Webflow and understand that visual development is the future. And so our brand and product marketing team are heavily focused on this kind of concept of category creation, building the brand with that market, which then obviously leads to demand coming through the funnel. Our second part of the marketing strategy is that thriving agency channel. So building the thriving agency channel to support them. So we actually organize the team in this way. I've got like one marketing team focused on the agency side, one marketing team focused more on that kind of like new market building side.
Oh, interesting.
And if we can build those two things, we build the two sides of that flywheel I talked about, and it just self-reinforces. And then supporting that, obviously, we've still got a growth team, right? Who's like making sure that conversion optimization is great, all those sort of things, supporting both of those, and a creative team and that sort of thing. But those are our two pillars of our marketing strategy. And so far, it's been working pretty well.
Love that. That's really cool. Since you said it, bifurcate the team on that, like you said, they have shared resources that are sort of pooled and then separate resources that are not. What are the type of things that they have that like just... you know, just on their side? Like what, how does that look?
Yeah, it's a marketing org structure is always complicated. I think about it like there's sort of three ways you can think about it. One is like hard line, this person's reporting into that leader. Another way is dotted line, like they sit in a central team, but they dotted line up into one marketing focus. And then the third way is like, they're just in a central team. And deciding whether or not to centralize or decentralize comes down to really what is the strategy for that specific marketing pillar. For example, we actually have great strength in the agency market. Agencies are aware of us. They love us. We have tons of them coming into our funnel day in, day out. Our bigger challenge with them is actually making them successful once they come into the funnel, making sure that they get clients, they know how to pitch Webflow, that they learn how to use Webflow. So the types of people that we put dedicated on our agency team are much more focused on agency enablement. Like we've got a team that does live streams. They did a live stream today all about how to use Webflow and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. They're building the partner program, the incentives around it, partner management, all of that sort of thing. Whereas on the other strategic pillar around going and building our brand awareness and demand in this new market of larger in-house teams, that is much more about brand marketing, right? So we have things like our strategic events team there that go to Forrester B2B Summit or Gartner Symposium. Our comms team sits there. Our content team sits there. Because what they're trying to do is build a category with a new market. And so the people we put there are much more about sort of brand building. And then the central resources, really, we have like two teams, growth, who are, no matter who's coming into our funnel, they need to think about that in a connected way, who comes to our website, how do we onboard them, etc. And then our creative team, who are creating like the assets required for all of those campaigns, we keep separately so that we don't have like a bunch of sort of disconnected brand identity, that sort of thing.
Any other thoughts on strategy or org structure or anything like that?
No, you know, I think my main advice for anybody who's, you know, a CMO or coming up to this stage is really making sure that you find that right balance between how you think about the brand level, solution level, and product level. I've typically joined companies, as I said, at this stage where they've had great success selling to early adopters. Early adopters tend to be much more interested in the product features. And the founders are typically technologists who are really close to that market. And so all they want to talk about is the product. They want to talk about this cool new feature that we're launching. You got to market the new feature, you know? And so all of the gravitational pull internally, not all of it, but a lot of it is around how do you do a better job of marketing the product? And what ends up happening in these companies is the growth stalls. Why?
Yeah.
Because you never break out of that like early adopter market, right? This kind of crossing the chasm stuff. And like the analogy that I've used internally and elsewhere is like, you know, if I'm the head of marketing at Tesla, I'm not like spending all my time talking about how the maps got better. No, I'm telling the world that electric cars are the future. And internally within technology companies, that typically tends to be the biggest challenge that they face, which is growth slows because they've never really tapped into those new markets by explaining the overall problem they're trying to solve in the world. And so this is why, as I said, like in my marketing team, I've kind of have these two very distinct focuses. One focus is like, yeah, market the heck out of the new features to our agencies that are coming in so they can use them, so they can sell them. Like, yeah, that makes total sense for that market, which is our original market. For this new market, no, that's what I want you to think about, brand level messaging, like solution level messaging, so that we go on like actually build momentum in a new space. And there, you know, there are companies that have done this well that have not fallen into that trap. The Gongs of the world really built the category of conversation intelligence. You know, Drift, I probably shouldn't mention Drift because they're competitor qualified, but you know, Drift did an amazing job. What was it, 5-6 years ago, of creating the concept of conversational marketing. So there are examples of it out there, but I will say that typically what I've seen as I've joined numerous of these companies is that the gravitational force is down to the product level, and you really, as a marketer, need to like push beyond that and make sure that you're continuing to grow the overall market.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny that you mentioned the Drift stuff, where it's like, you know, compare that to Qualified. Where Qualified is, you know, one of the interesting things that we've talked about with them is part of the reason why we rebranded the show to be called Pipeline Visionaries is every time they posted about Pipeline, it got more clicks, it got more views, it got more whatever, because that's what people are actually focused on. They don't care about, you know, like the conversational nature of it, right? It's like, they care about, is this thing going to help drive pipeline? How do I turn my website into a selling machine? How do I do these things? It's not just about the feature. It's about this like broader thing, you know, no surprise. Like Craig was the CMO of Salesforce and he's the CEO, you know, Qualified. It's like, of course that he's going to be able to see that stuff. But I think that that's like speaking to the broader category is like, there is no pipeline cloud. There is no, you know, solution that's being able to look at this stuff. You know, he, when we sat down originally, when he was like, I'm starting this company. And he was like, if the CEO of your biggest prospect walked in the door of your headquarters, what would you do? It's like, oh, you roll out the red carpet, you get a conference, you get it. If he comes to your website, what do you do? And it's like, oh, he gets treated like everybody else. Right. And like that thing of like, how do you make that entire experience completely different in order to shape the pipeline? I always felt like that's, you know, that's a category shifting proposition.
Yeah, Qualify's marketing strategy was genius. I remember in college learning about this. I can't remember what it's called, but it's where effectively like a smaller company will set up their operations beside a larger company. So wherever the larger company is kind of like set up, maybe their stores or whatever, the smaller company that is selling something related will sort of follow them, which makes sense. And it's kind of like what Qualify did was the digital equivalent of that, which is like, hey, people are already, there's a massive demand for products that are the Salesforce customers need. Let's just latch into that existing demand there for that adjacent category and then suck it into our category, right? And you've now seen that in other places like Klaviyo building on top of Shopify, right? Mm-hmm. Klaviyo are now a, I don't know, $1 billion ARR company or something.
Yeah.
And it's a really, 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 really smart and a different approach, I think, that a Webflow is not the same kind of like adjacency that we could do that with. So we are a bit more in like go create category mode. But if you have the opportunity to do that as a company, like go for it all day. It should certainly be a really core part of your strategy.
Yeah. And I think, you know, too, and I'm curious to your thoughts on this is like, you know, you're not in the category of website builders, or you're not trying to be in that category. Like you're something beyond that, much beyond that. And I think that that's like part of the thing. Like when I remember when I saw the post, that's why influencers are so important. Emily Kramer was like, if you are a startup building a company, you need to be building it on, you know, Webflow or, you know, this one other competitor.
Yeah.
And I literally was like, what is Webflow? And I looked it up and I talked to Craig, and Craig Swenzer built Qualified himself on Webflow.
Awesome.
Yeah. And again, it speaks to sort of like the nature of that stuff. And I just remember thinking like, oh, I don't know what this thing is, but I had all of the lifetime of marketing experience building websites on every other type of platform being like, this is horrible. Like, this is such a terrible experience. But to get beyond that is like, you know, the idea of like what this website is and who can do things. And this idea of, you know, that y'all are talking about now about having code, but not having to write code, right? It's not just about being low code or no code. It's about the code is still in there, but the person is not a developer is freaking super powerful. And obviously that's why you're positioned around that.
Yeah. Like when I joined Webflow, they'd actually spent a long time using the term no code. And one of our main challenges was to reposition ourselves. Like a lot of the time we were thrown in with the Wix and the Squarespaces of the world. And the no code thing kind of played into that a little bit, that we're, you know, not enterprise grade and those sort of things. It's like, no, you're coding. We're going to give you this, you're coding. You're just not writing it out letter by letter. The other thing that I think a lot about around category is sometimes it does make sense to enter an existing category and help people reimagine what that is. So take iPhone, for example. I don't know this to be the case. I was never at Apple, but I would imagine there was a huge amount of debate internally about, this isn't a phone. It's not a phone. It's a small tablet. In fact, my understanding is that the original team was working on the iPad and they couldn't get it quite to work. And then Steve Jobs is like, hey, let's make a phone first, right? And so I'm sure that they didn't want to call it iPhone. In a lot of ways, you'd be like, that's wild. Don't do that. That's not what we want people to use it for. What people use it for is this like computer in the pocket. But the genius of it was to say, no. Like everybody knows they need to have a phone. Let's start there. Let's tap into that and then reimagine what a phone can be. Now, Apple are of a scale that they have the power to reimagine, like, and money to be able to do that. But I would like, that's kind of a risky strategic decision that was genius. Whereas for Webflow, the equivalent would be that we say, no, we're a website builder. So yeah, we, you know, we're in the category that Wix and Squarespace are in, but reimagine what they can do, those things can do. Anyway, like I do think there are some times that it makes sense to take an existing category and reimagine it, but oftentimes, certainly for Webflow, that was a failed strategy for us, so we didn't do it.
Yeah, and you know, just to finish the thought on the Apple piece there is, what did they put in all their ads for the, you know, decade of the iPhone? Shot on iPhone, right? So what are they marketing? A camera,
yeah,
right? It's like, that's the thing. It's like, because they realize, oh, you know what everybody does with these things? They take a million photos and videos of their friends and they do all this stuff. And like, that is the currency of our of our modern world is, you know, all of these social channels, all this stuff, none of it exists without photos. Where else better to take them than on your phone, right? So it's like, that's the sort of thing, is like understanding what is the actual reason or what is the actual utility of the thing that people are buying. Yeah, they want a phone. Yeah, they want to be able to access all the apps, but you can do that wherever. But like, this is what being shot on iPhone looks like. Looks like, you know, all their ads shot on iPhone. I just like always go back to that. And then I think the Pixel ended up, then their ads started being like the best camera. And it's like, yeah, Apple doesn't say they're the best camera. They say this beautiful image is shot on iPhone. They show you what it means. They don't tell you they have the best camera.
Yeah, not to nerd out too much on marketing strategy, like Apple are obviously like incredible at this, but you know, Apple, there are two other things they're doing there. One is they've long been seen as a creative company, you know, and so tapping into that is a true thread of their brand is really important for them. And I also think that, as I talked before about the kind of brand hierarchy from brand to solution to product, as I double click on that, and I've got a framework I could share, but in there is the aspirational customer that you need to define. And in great brands, hero that aspirational customer. And Apple have always done that. Like you think about the original, like Behind the Mac campaign, Think Different, you know, We Are for the Crazy, mm-hmm. We Are for the Whatever. It was always about the person behind it and what you know, emotion and how they were trying to empower a human. Those stories and the way the Webflow is changing people's lives, and even our mission to give everyone developer superpowers, is very centered in a human insight and an empowerment of a human. And we've really tried to continue to lean into that, including our first ever billboard campaign in Times Square. We put some of our most successful customers up and showed, you really hero them, centering around the human behind the product is like really important.
All right, let's get to our next segment, the playbook.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game.
Where you open up the playbook and talk about the tactics that help you win. What are your three channels or tactics that are your most uncuttable budget items?
Yeah, these aren't going to be that shocking. The first is for sure search, right? Both paid and organic search. When I joined, we actually invested in many, many, many channels. We pretty much cut it all the way back down to search. So paid social, really low ROI. Paid video, like hard to, with attribution to ROI, but we did uplift testing, terrible ROI. And so we brought our way down to search, and it's been very effective. So we've been able to like cut our CAC by to a third of what it was and accelerate growth. So that's number one. Paid social upmarket. I mentioned that we're doing the shift upmarket. We have found LinkedIn to be very effective as a way to tap into upmarket audiences where you can be much more targeted around size of company, job type, and those sort of things. That's been very effective. Yep. So I could not turn that off. And then third, like I mentioned in our shift up market, field marketing generally, like events, getting ourselves out there, our content machine. So we have thought leadership to put in market has been critical as well. And I'll give a bonus one. I know you asked for three, but the fourth, it's not really like a media investment, but our growth team is critical. All those things, as a, you know, we've talked about this at the start. They drop people at our website. They drop people in our product. All the things that we're doing around conversion rate optimization, improved onboarding, creating a product qualified lead motion up to sales has been critical for us as well.
Yeah. One of the things that I remember when we were building the site, as you know, building a website is a very personal journey, especially for me as a CEO. And I have sort of like this vision of what I wanted the website to be and the brand to look like and all those sort of things. And I pity all of the Webflow architects that have to deal with the visionary founder trying to do all this stuff. But there was some posts that it was basically just like, you know, the top Webflow websites. Gosh, I spent so much freaking time on that site, on that page, just scrolling through, just looking at what's possible, looking at parallax and all the different things and what are the things that we could do and all that. And I want this and I want this and I want this. Gosh, you got to be able to see that stuff. And then you got to be able to hear from people and how they use it and, you know, and get that know, like, and trust, right? Like when you're going up market, you know, you're like, you got to be able to have the conversation of what could be rather than just, you know, what is.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What's one thing that you're not investing in? You kind of mentioned something already, but that wasn't working or fading away or something you don't want to invest in this year?
Yeah, again, this is probably obvious, but paid social for a long time, I think, was like really effective for folk. not only do I think that just CAC, as everyone jumped on the bandwagon there, like increased, then obviously you have targeting challenges that have crept in that meant that the targeting is worse. So the CAC just shot through the roof and the ROI just degraded. And so we've pretty much fully pulled out of that, apart from our investment in LinkedIn upmarket. And yeah, just really challenged channel.
Yeah. Yeah, my only concern with LinkedIn is I feel like everybody's doing the same thing because they all realize the same thing. So that tends to get a little bit expensive too. That's the main problem with those two channels, because we do the same thing. Our strategy is, I call it podcast paid and partners, where it's like, you know, original content paid through search and LinkedIn, and then going to market with partners that are selling to the same people. We have a very outbound play as part of our like content strategies. But the idea of that paid, of like, I found the exact same thing, is like Google and LinkedIn end up working really well, especially together. They work really well together, and everything else I just felt like was so expensive. But then randomly you'll see those LinkedIn things just shoot up so, so high.
It's a challenge, yeah. And I should say, you know, kind of the way I answered that question was more like direct investments in growth. Most of the companies that I've worked for, if you look at the numbers, well over 50% of the customers come inbound through just the strength of the brand. Right? They come in direct, they come in through referral, branded search, those sorts of things. And that's true for Webflow as well. And so this is why, ignoring those very sort of growth tactics that I mentioned, we do put a heavy investment in ensuring that we're building brand and also that partner channel. Like that partner channel is at 50% of our business, and that is an acquisition channel in and of itself. So I would say that maybe the higher level answer is that we have three broad ways we bring people in. There's like the strength of the brand. There's like, you know, growth marketing, which I talked to, and then there's our partner channel. And so don't want to like kind of miss the fact that there are two other massive drivers of our acquisition.
Yeah, what do you do for brand stuff? How do you spend your money?
Yeah, well, right now it's mostly organic, right? Up until now, I think, again, it's pretty typical for companies of our stage, brand is built through community-led brand, right? At Intercom, it was Des and Ong, the two founders, at every startup meetup. They were on This Week in Startups talking the whole time. They were in the community, and that's because they get the product, they get the customer, they're in there. And so the brand is very much built bottom up. They find a target market, they become part of that community, and then it grows from there. And the first stage of brand growth at Webflow is very, very similar. We have a very heavy investment in our community team. The founders were heavily involved in the design community, freelancers and small agencies with the heart of the brand. So, and that has maintained us a lot to today. That does not get us into that new market. And so we are heavily investing now across two main areas. One is analyst relations, where we're now starting to like really engage with the likes of Forrester, Gartner, et cetera, to start to leverage existing categories and get covered in the CMS quadrant, all those sort of things. The second one, which is maybe a bit more interesting, is our media investments. I use the term niche media, where if you want to go build your brand, you go to an agency, they'll say, great, how much money do you have? You have 5 million. They'll say, great. And because they have to operate at scale, what will they do? They'll go and find media partners that are at scale so that they can do 3 or 4 deals, put 1 million into each one, and suddenly your billboards are everywhere. You're like getting covered in Wired, which is not that very, you know, focused. And it's like, media's moved up. Like, that's not how people consume media. Why are marketers buying media like that? And so this concept of niche media is to align our media buying strategy with how people consume content, which is in a much more niche way. So right now, we've just done, I think, 5 different podcast sponsorship deals with podcasts that are consumed by CMOs, which is our new target market. So things like Lenny's podcast, which is a bit broader. It's not just CMOs on Lenny's. CMO moves, things like that. And so we've got a marketing events, right? I talk about Forrester, Gartner. These are, where are CMOs? Where are they consuming content? Where are they like listening to things? Go be there. Either advertise or sponsor the event and go get a speaking slot. And so it's a much more niche media approach. And we're building up. We only really started that approach like 3 months ago. And so the problem with that approach is that it's slower, right? You gotta, the other approach, mass, do one big media partnership and you're kind of like everywhere. this approach requires you to do, you know, 20 deals with individual podcasts, 10 deals with different events. And so it's a bit of a slower burn, but for sure the right thing for us to invest in. And I would, you know, anybody listening to this, if they're a marketer or they work with a marketing team, this concept of niche media buying is like really important. And so, yeah, that's our second big area of investment.
I 100% agree with that strategy. And that's where, like, I look at those people as partners, like people that you can cut a check to. It matters to them, puts food on the table, that it allows them to create what they do best. I love that stuff. I mean, it's partially it's to my heart, but it's also just like, those are the people who have massive, massive spheres of influence. And those are moonshots. Like you can have 100x ROI with stuff like that. Whereas the other type of paid stuff where, you know, all the other stuff that you mentioned earlier, you know, it'll get you your 2x and, you know, you go on your merry way. But this is where you can have an outsized result, as with niche media. I 100% agree.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to our final segment, Quick Hits, which is quick questions and quick answers, just like how Quickly Qualified helps companies generate pipeline. Tap into your greatest asset, your website, to identify your most valuable visitors and instantly start sales conversations. Quick and easy, just like these questions. Go to qualified.com to learn more. Shane, I don't have to convince you how important the website is, but for everybody else out there, Quick Hits. Shane, are you ready?
I am ready.
What's a hidden talent or skill that's not on your resume?
I can play guitar and piano, which is a bit boring, but I can do that badly, but I do it.
Favorite book, podcast, or TV show that you'd recommend?
This is embarrassing. The Bachelor. Me and my wife watch it every week. Great way to melt your brain after a hard day's work.
Love it. Do you have a favorite non-marketing hobby that maybe indirectly makes you a better marketer?
Yeah, writing. Everyone should write. Write down your thoughts. Write. I wrote a book in the past. Like, writing is so important.
What's your best advice for a first-time CMO?
Become a CFO. Basically, you need to be the person that is as financially literate as anyone in the company. If you hear a financial term that you don't understand, go learn it. Go read a book on finance. That will earn you a seat at the table, and people will back your decisions as a result.
Fantastic. This has been awesome for listeners. Go check out Webflow. If your website's not a Webflow, I don't know what you're doing at this point. You listened to 45 minutes of us talk about it. So Shane, any final thoughts, anything to plug?
No, yeah, just I think we had so much time talking about Webflow already. It's game changing for any business, big and small. Go check it out.
Awesome. Thanks so much and take care.
Cheers, Ian.
Thanks again to our friends at Qualified.com, a conversational sales and marketing platform that transforms the way B2B companies sell. Go to Qualified.com to learn more.